Alright, so chapter 10 was about a spiritual mind treatment for a specific condition. And I started reading. I saw Bruce Lipton, and he's got a video out that I can't remember the title, but it's I think it's related to his new book, which is called Spontaneous Evolution. And it's coming from science, because he is a cellular biologist. So I like most of his perspectives because it's coming from science, which I think today a lot of people, I think science is what is going to bring spirituality to the next level, because science is proving what the ancient mystics have known forever, and making it real for people, making it undeniable. So he talked a bit about the caterpillar and the way that the caterpillar moves from caterpillar to cocoon stage to butterfly. And what really caught my attention is that the cocoon stage, the caterpillar turns into liquid, and he calls them imaginal cells. And so it's imaginal cells that are transforming and then eventually become the butterfly. And I think that when we pray, we're in the cocoon phase, because we're turning away from the outside world. We're just focused on the inner world. And you mean, and when the caterpillar is in the cocoon, it doesn't even have an awareness probably of the outer world. And so what takes us into the cocoon stage, is often what's wrong. You know, where we see something that's wrong, and we have to cut ourselves some slack with that kind of thinking, because what Bruce Lipton says is the brain is actually wired to look for what's wrong, and that's a survival thing. Doesn't serve us so much now. I mean, yes, there's times when we need to make sure we're safe when we're crossing the street, or, you know, out in traffic, things like that. But much of the time, looking for what's wrong is not serving us, because that way we're focusing on what we don't want. We're not focusing on what's right and what's wonderful and what's new, the new day. So but what's wrong does serve us, because it draws us into that place of prayer. It draws us into the internal world, where we get in touch with those, I'm going to call it, imaginal thoughts, thoughts where we use our imagination to expand possibilities, and then from that place, you know, bursting out into the butterfly, being willing to fly, being willing to have the experience of something new, something more. You know, it's either a change from what we don't want, or it's enhancing what is already great and grand. So I think that was an interesting way to look at prayer, is to be in that state of the inner world and imagination. So what allows us to be in a place of creating change is choosing. And we choose based on our perspectives. And a lot of our perspectives come, they're kind of beneath the surface as far as the source of why we believe a certain thing. And Bruce Lipton talked about that, you know, children, when they study the brain waves of children, they're like, it was as much as 70% or more in theta state, which is that meditative state. Those are the brain waves of meditation. And If you know about theta brain waves, it's not only a very creative place to be, but it's if you're in meditation, it's like being very open to that's why children are not only creative, but they absorb everything in their environment, and that's nature's way of helping humans learn their culture, learn whatever they need to learn to be safe in the world, which is a good thing. But they're also learning, they're picking up, all anything that from people around them that might not be beneficial, dysfunctional habits or belief systems that aren't true, or that kind of thing. They're also downloading all of that, and so that becomes the subconscious, and so that's why perceptions can be tricky, because we may get this gut feeling about something that we don't even understand why we feel the way we do about something, but it's beneath the surface of our awareness from something that we may have been exposed to during childhood. But perceptions, we can change perceptions by consciously working toward a new way of believing, a new willingness, and so there may be resistance to change, but I think the two things that are key in becoming willing to change, willing to embrace a new perception, is knowing who I am. Not just as a spiritual being, but as spirit in form. And in the book with Frederick Bailey's, he talks about that we're the drop in the ocean of spirit's life. And that's a sweet way of looking at it, that we really are a piece of that grand life that is spirit. And so once I can embrace that, then I feel the power to create. And so then when I recognize this programming that doesn't serve me, I think it's a lot easier to make the changes that we want to see and the way we want to be. Talking about perceptions, Bruce Lipton told a story about a captain that's out at sea, and he sees a light at the horizon, and he radios to this other ship because he's heading right towards this light. He radios to the other ship and says, "You need to change your course. This is my course, and I'm coming your way, and you need to change course." And he gets a message back saying, "No, you need to change your course." And then he gets a little irritated, and he's going to stand his ground and says, "No, this is my course, and I, you need to change yours." And then finally there's a radio message back saying, "We're a lighthouse. You need to change your course." And so, it's like, okay, he didn't have all the information he needed. He had a perception of what that light was. He was sure it was another ship. But once he had the truth, he was, obviously he had to change his course. So perceptions can be habits of thinking and not truth. And I'll never forget Dr. Hugh Len, who I've been to a few workshops with him. He's the one that is sharing the Hawaiian shamanic tradition of Ho'oponopono. And he would say, it's all data. Everything in physical form, it's all data. So it's a matter of how are you responding to this data? And one person's irritation could be another person's blessing. It depends on how you view the data and how you're responding. So when we get into the power of thought, which is spiritual mind treatment, is all about shifting perceptions, willing to see a new perspective through thinking. And Bruce Lipton gave a couple of really good examples of how this is already being demonstrated in the world. And eventually I think science is going to start focusing some of this. I mean, we all know the placebo effect, where a group of people are given a sugar pill and told that, this is going to be a benefit or cure whatever ails them. and then the other people are given some other treatment that's more traditional, but nobody knows, you know, who's getting what. And the people that get the sugar pill, you know, there's a high percentage of people that are healed. Well, how can you explain that? It is their belief that it will work, that heals them. So that's one really good example. Firewalking was another example that Bruce Lipton gave. And I called up Diane Preston because she and Ed, and maybe some of you have done firewalking. They had done this at a retreat not too long ago, and she said there was a lot of preparation ahead of time. So, you know, to me, they're putting the people that are going to be doing this, they're putting them in their cocoon place. They're connecting with the inner world. And she said, Diane said, from the very beginning, they said, if you choose to do this, you have an out at the very, you know, at the very last minute, you can choose not to do it. And so, but she said she really had a strong sense of faith that she was going to be all right. And she said once she walked, she said, you just walk normally across this hot bed of coals. And then at the end, the facilitator picked her up, and then somebody sprayed her feet off in case there was any coals that stuck to her feet. But she had absolutely no negative, nothing, you know, she didn't have any burns on her feet or anything. And she said it was just exhilarating. And, I mean, people, that's why people do it, to prove that, you know, if I can walk on fire, I can do anything. You know, it's that kind of experience that brings that kind of mentality. Complete faith. But the prep is very important, you know, to being ready to take that step. You have to have that mental piece in place and know that nothing's going to hurt you. Some other examples of mind over matter is there's stories of people who lift very heavy objects in order to save someone's life. You know, a mother lifting a car up in order to save her child. There are stories of fundamentalists who will prove that God is protecting them by handling rattlesnakes and being bitten, and they never have any ill effects from the bites. There's the spontaneous remission, which normally is thought of as a change in the story. It's coming from something is changing in somebody's thinking, which, if you know every thought has a frequency of vibration. Let's say someone has a terminal condition, and they decide, well, you know, I might as well just relax and enjoy my life. I might as well have a good time. I'm only going to be here a short time. And they live, they start doing all the things that they want to do, and they come into a place of joy. That's such a different frequency, perhaps, than where they were before, that all of a sudden their disease is no more. Yeah. And for all of these kind of examples, science will usually say, well, either it was a misdiagnosis or it was a fluke, instead of saying, gee, we don't really understand why this happened. Maybe we should be exploring that idea more, you know? But I think we're getting there. I think people like Bruce Lipton are getting that message out into the world. So he says, the exceptions of today can become the accepted science of tomorrow. And so that's always the way it is. That, you know, there was a time when everyone thought the world was flat, the earth was flat. And then science proved that it was round. You know, so it's, and I'm not saying that we have to wait for science to prove things to us, but it sure is helpful, I think, for a lot of the mainstream. I mean, I consider myself to be a mystic, and I don't want to ever lose a sense of magic where science is going to explain everything away. I mean, I don't think that would ever happen, because there still would be the mystical experiences that science probably can't explain. But and then there's one more example that Bruce Lipton gave. It's a new science called psychoneuroimmunology, which is the study of how the mind, which would be thought, controls the brain, which controls the immune system. And so the mind is shaping the character of your health. And this was discovered through the oddity, I don't think it's very common, of multiple personality disorder, where depending on the personality that was showing up, different personalities had different conditions, ailments, you know, physical ailments. And that was the only way that they could explain it, is that it is truly the mind that's creating the ailment, because one personality would have something and another personality didn't, and it's the same body, you know, so how else could you explain it? So that's pretty interesting. So if we think about the mind having the impact, thoughts having the impact on our bodies, and get into a little bit of the science of it, I was listening to Dr. Joe Dispenza, and he was talking about how stress affects our bodies. And he gave the example of a deer being chased by a lion. And when the deer is under that kind of stress, I mean, it's a life and death situation, that it instinctively focuses on three things. It focuses on body, the safety of its body, the environment, like where is it going, where is it heading, and the times that it takes to get there. So, you know, is my body going fast enough to keep me safe? Can I get to a safe place in time before the lion catches me? You know, so those are kind of the three components that the deer would be looking at. And adrenaline is obviously pumping through its system, and so that's a survival thing. Now, but he's saying that when humans are under stress, that we have the same reaction. We get adrenaline pumping, and he says that we end up focusing on the safety of our stuff. So that's the kind of our environment. We also might start focusing on what we don't like about our bodies, which I think was very interesting. And is there enough time, or thinking about the past or thinking about the future? So we are vulnerable because of the way the stress hormones affect our mind, that we still have those three components that we're focusing on. We're focusing on them in a different way than the deer. But I just thought that was really interesting, that it's going to it can impact our thoughts in that way. So science of mind and spiritual mind treatment is a very logical way to take us out of that kind of habitual thinking or the stress factors, and move us into having more creative power. And it's very logical as we connect. I think most of you probably know the five steps of treatment, but just connecting with the creative power of the universe, claiming that power that is within us, and then choosing truth. So we're shifting from perception, you know, mostly what we don't want, or to enhance what we want, to a grander truth, or to the truth of the divine principle, the divine quality that we want to experience in our lives, and then being grateful and trusting that it is so. So the belief, that releasing step, is really about, you know, we're done because we believe. We can let it go because we believe it is so. Frederick Bailey's, who is the one that wrote the basic principles of science of mind, the book that the study group is focusing on this year, he talked about health issues as being a source, that most health issues have a source, an underlying source of irritation. And I thought that was interesting. And he said that if you can align yourself with God, the divine principle, spirit is never irritated. And so if I am spirit, if I am that drop in the ocean of the spirit's life, then I have to give permission to be irritated. There should be no irritation. Now my mind was thinking, well, now wait a minute. aren't there things that everybody would be irritated about? Like a mosquito buzzing your face or something like that. But, you know, that's just my mind arguing with the truth. So there again, we're looking at the reaction to an event, reaction to an irritation, that we're always a choice. And that if we can, it could be that, you know, okay, maybe if there is a mosquito buzzing me, if I were at a different vibration, if I could relax and maybe I would send out a frequency of invisibility. And, you know, who knows? Who knows what's possible? So, just connecting with the idea, no matter what the quality is that you want to experience, if you can connect with that divine idea that, like with supply, with money, spirit is never experiences lack. Spirit is never without whatever is needed in any moment. And so, in the book, it suggested you think of supply as a reservoir rather than a stream. You know, that there's this vast reservoir that we're drawing from. Instead of a gentle stream flowing in, that there's this huge reservoir that we have to draw from for whatever we need. And all of the divine qualities can be applied to every area of our life. Like harmony, we often think of in relationship to other people, being in harmony with other people. But you can be in harmony in your mind. You could be at peace in your mind. Quality like freedom. You might, again, it could relate to money, to the freedom to spend and have the experiences you want, but it might also be the freedom to have the adventures, or to break free from programmed thinking that's not serving you. So there's, so any divine principle or quality can be applied to any area of your life. So coming back to the cocoon idea and the caterpillar, the butterfly requires a willingness. So, what are you willing to experience? What, you know, I always try to listen to my heart, because I feel like that's where my greatest guidance comes, that the heart is the channel to either my higher self or the divine. And so I always think, what is my heart telling me that is the truth about a situation? How am I willing to, you know, the butterfly gets to fly. How am I willing to fly? Because when I think of flying, that's like soaring to me. Mm-hmm. And that's the experience I want often, is to soar, is to feel so connected to life, to loving life, to having incredible experiences, mystical experiences. What am I willing to be and do? What are the qualities that are being called forth within me that will shift the current experience to the next highest level? And I think it helps to remember that love is behind it all, that spirit, love, all of those divine qualities and divine principle is behind my greatest good, that this is nothing that I had to earn. I came into this life with all of to everything I need in order to thrive and to soar. And that love is behind that whole idea. That I'm that supported, that there's so much support for me and for everyone. And so when we think about love as a healing energy, we could think of it as energy, that it's not just healing a condition, it's healing the thinking behind it. And that's really the piece that when we're in spiritual mind treatment, it's, yes, we may say we may say in our prayer about the condition and about the change that we want, but it's really the thought about the condition, because the condition could stay the same, and if our thought about it changes our experience of the condition. And so I think a lot of times it's really our thoughts about it rather than the condition itself. And I think if you change your thought about the condition changes. But if it doesn't change, the experience of it changes, and so we might even think it has changed. Mm-hmm. And so from a place of willingness to soar, being willing to have success, to have the best experience that we can about who we are, to feel like we're fulfilling our purpose in being here. We came here to be and do something, and to feel like that is being fulfilled. That's when I think we're meeting life and allowing for life. We're meeting life where we are and allowing for life to flow freely and for spirit to express the best of who we are. To me, that's the butterfly. That's the fulfillment of our purpose. And so having that experience, it almost always requires us being clear about what we want and being willing to open to spirit. Sometimes I feel like I'm clear about what I want as far as the quality, but I'm not real clear about the exact experience. And sometimes I think that might actually be better. I mean, there's two ways that you can kind of pray. They say outlining is, in a spiritual mind treatment, is getting very clear, very specific. You know exactly you want that red car. You know, that's what you're treating for. And then there's another way where you're treating for a quality, for an experience, and you're not sure what it is. You only know the feeling that you want. And oftentimes, you know, the red car, it's still a feeling. It's the feeling of that new red car that lights you up for whatever reason, you know. And so, yeah. But I wanted to tell you a story about shifting perspective, because I witnessed this weekend. We were up visiting Jim's mother, who has dementia. And she's not. She just turned 92, and she's in a nice facility. But ever since I've known her for 17 years, she watched too much news, and so she always had a lot of negativity about the world and the way things are and the state of things and all of that, which is very common. It's very common. If you watch very much news, you can get there real easily. And so I don't think she really watches that much news where she is. They do have a television on, and they do put the residents in front of the television. But I think it was like the old movies network is what was on when I noticed. But she still has memories, I think, of when she watched a lot of news. And so she gets on these ruminating thoughts that aren't positive about, people fighting. And so we would reassure her that, that happens in the world, but she's in a safe place. Mm-hmm. And she would affirm that, she feels safe. But she looked at Jim and she said, "Why am I here? What am I doing here?" And his sister-in-law had told us that she asked that question often, and I said, "Well, you wonder, is it a question about what am I doing here still on this earth, or what am I doing in this place? Why aren't I at home?" Yeah. So, you know, there, you could take it a couple different ways. But Jim responded with telling her that, well, you're here because there's people here to take care of you. And she kind of said, oh, really? He said, yeah, there's people here that want to take care of you and make sure that you get enough food to eat and that all of your needs are met. And she was like, oh, really? I mean, she was, it was so sweet. I mean, she was starting to smile. Her whole facial expression changed. And so he was shifting her perspective in that moment. And it was just, we can do that, I think, for anyone. You know, and that's what, I think that's the beauty of our philosophy, is that we can talk to someone who's having a challenge and say, well, what about this? Mm-hmm. What about that really you're moving towards something that's great, you know, and this is just the prompt. The challenge is often the prompt that causes us to make a change. So it's actually a blessing, even though in the moment it may not feel like one. And so I guess that is what I would affirm and encourage us all to just remember the power that we hold in bringing new perspectives and new perceptions, that our ability to shift not only our own perception, but someone else's perception can help them perhaps go into the cocoon place where there's imagination activated to new possibilities and then eventually soar. Yay. Thank you.
That was excellent.